I'm really enjoying the quiet. It's quite remarkable after one day of sitting. That's all it's been. And hopefully all of you are finding a little bit more peace in your minds by now. Even peace with the lack of peace. This is also a kind of peacefulness that can come about through the practice. So this morning for our meditation, I wanted to give a few more suggestions, really, and also talk about the five hindrances which inevitably will arise in the mind from time to time. Sometimes you might think you have all of them at once, but I assure you that's not really possible. So I'm going to go over the five hindrances and some skillful ways to work with them and some skillful attitudes to use, because sometimes we see these things as enemies and we use a little bit too much force. So I wanted to start with a quote from the Dhammapada, which I find very beautiful and in a sense is what we've been doing so far. So this is from the Dhammapada 9s, verse 122. So the Buddha says, "Think not lightly of good, saying it will not come to me. Drop by drop, the water pot is filled. Likewise, the wise one, gathering it, little by little, fills oneself with good." And I love this simile because it shows us, it's almost as though the mind is like that water pot, and drop by drop, we fill it up with goodness. The trouble is, of course, these water pots are huge, and we're filling it up, but we can't see how full it is. You know, it might be just a few more drops from being full, or it might be many years away. We don't know when it's going to overflow, perhaps the next lifetime. But what we do know is that drop by drop, if we keep on accumulating goodness, you know, as much as we can throughout the day and in our thought processes, in the way we regard the world, eventually it will be filled. So far on this retreat, we've been trying to fill our water jars with beautiful, wholesome qualities. But also in the suttas, it talks about things that can cause the jars to leak. So, of course, if there are leaks in that jar, it takes a little longer, and especially if you become preoccupied with plugging up those leaks. So, in a sense, the five hindrances can be seen as leaks in the pot, leaks in our beautiful water jar of wholesome qualities. And another simile for the hindrances can be like weeds in the garden of the mind. So, if you think of the mind as a beautiful, fertile soil, then the weeds, the hindrances are like the weeds, and the good qualities that we're trying to cultivate are like the flowers. So if we plant those flowers strongly and tend to them carefully, they can eventually supplant the weeds. They outgrow the weeds, and the weeds become less and less of a problem on their own. So I want to talk about these so that we can first of all recognize what they are and learn not to feed them, and make it easier to eventually pull them out. But the first approach is not to pull them out. The first approach is to actually feed the opposites, if you like, and keep on putting in those wholesome qualities. So the five hindrances in the suttas are defined as imperfections or obscurations of the mind which weaken wisdom and also nourish delusion. Yeah, so this implies that they distort the way we see things. They turn things into what they're not really about. For example, if you have lust in the mind, a lot of craving, especially maybe passion for someone, and that arises, then you only focus on the beautiful qualities of that person that stimulate the lust. You won't be able to see anything else, you know. You attend in a way that feeds the lust. Or if you have anger and ill will towards a person, you're more likely to find fault with them. You're not actually seeing things the way they are, but you're seeing things the way you want them to be. Or you're seeing things the way that feeds a certain defilement in you, a certain longing or maybe ill will. Another definition for the hindrances is those things that cover the mind. So the word nivarana literally means like a veil. So it's not only that you see things incorrectly, sometimes you see something and it really is there, but you see it vaguely, as if you're seeing it through a curtain or a veil. So you're not really clear on what it is that's in front of you because your perception is not clear. And I like this simile of leeks as well, you know, the leeks in the bucket of goodness, if you like. And when the bucket leaks, it also leaks out our mindfulness. We leak out our energy and our joy. So the hindrances prevent us from feeling happiness. They prevent the happiness from accumulating and developing in our mind. And it's important to say that these hindrances are natural. They're very natural for anyone who's still on the path, and that's all of us here. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who's also been a bhikkhuni for many, many years, and she says she lives with many wonderful monastics, you know, nuns who've dedicated their lives to practice for at least a couple of decades, and they're wonderful people, and she says they too have hindrances arising. And for her to live with these wonderful companions and to know this is such a relief. But the difference, I think, with people who've been practicing a while and maybe people who have just begun, is that we understand these things are par for the course. We accept them. We learn to open up to them and to understand them. We don't take them so very personally, yeah? So we focus on creating beautiful conditions in the mind so that those hindrances won't arise. And also, I like the simile of trying to plug up the leaks. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what those hindrances are and also where they arise. Because unless we know where those leaks are, how can we start to plug them up? And I like the paradigm that my teacher Ajahn Brahm uses. He says the hindrances arise in the space between the knower or the knowing part of the mind and the known. In other words, between the mind and the objects of the mind. So the hindrances, the difficulties, the obstacles are not in the object. We can't blame a person for stimulating our anger or our lust or whatever it might be. It always arises in relationship to an object that comes in contact with the mind. So there's that gap there. And in that gap, we can apply the antidote. We can apply beautiful qualities that, in a sense, protect the mind from these hindrances that can be a drain to our happiness. So once we know where the problem is, we can actually attend to it skillfully. And I like to think of these antidotes as, you could, if using the simile of leeks, you could think of the antidote as a kind of lining in your water jar. Yeah, so you're actually building a beautiful, thick, cushioned lining that's watertight, that makes your jar watertight. So you don't have to worry about the holes. Over time, you can attend to those holes, right? If you have issues with anger, you think it's an issue, everybody has it actually. But if that's a hindrance that comes up a lot for you, don't worry. You can apply this beautiful lining of benevolence, of loving kindness, of goodwill, and the hole will still be there. But in your daily life, you can work on, you know, the way you regard the world, the way you respond to the people and situations in your life, and develop more skillful attitudes. So bit by bit, you stitch up those holes. But the first line of protection for the mind is to make that lining really strong. If you're using the simile of the flowers in the garden and you want to smother the weeds, then you make that soil really, really fertile for flowers. Yeah, flowers grow in soft and nutritious soil, whereas hindrances grow in very hard soil. So if we make our mind soft, if we till the soil, you know, with beautiful qualities again of kindness, compassion, making peace, patience. Patience is a very soft, loving quality. Then the hindrances can't readily grow. It's almost as though kindness smothers the hindrances. They just can't flourish when kindness abounds. So what are these five hindrances in brief? And the main two, the first two broad brushstrokes, if you like, from which the others emanate, are guess what? Sensual craving or desire or interest in the sensory world and ill will. And the Buddha said that sense desire is like a debt. It's something that you have to pay back later, especially if you indulge. This is very clear in the case of things like addictions, you know. Maybe it causes a temporary relief of a very unpleasant, compelling sensation, but in the long run you become so dependent on that that you actually lose your strength and it drains your happiness. You know, when we're addicted, we depend on that substance or that particular habit, even if it's, you know, scrolling along Facebook for hours a day. We depend on that to kind of, in a way, distract us from something that's very difficult to be with, difficult to bear. But we're not developing that strength of mind, you know, we're leaning on that substance and actually becoming in debt. Ill will, he says, is like a sickness or a disease. And we touched on this last night. You know, when somebody's angry, they're actually unwell. They're not in their right mind. Remember, these hindrances are things that distort the truth. So we're seeing things in a distorted way. We're not seeing things as they are. And we're reacting to our own projections much of the time. And then the next three come from those. They're almost like extensions of those that are specific for the meditator. They rise in meditation. The first one, which I'm sure many of you here experience, is tiredness and lethargy. And the tiredness part is like the tiredness of the body. The lethargy is like the sluggishness or even stubbornness of the mind that just doesn't want to comply. And the Buddha likens this to being in prison, because you're kind of trapped by that tiredness and lethargy. The mind is stuck. The next one is restlessness and worry, sometimes translated as restlessness and remorse. And the Buddha said this is like being a slave, you know, being dragged. You have to be dragged wherever your master wants you to go. First pull this way, then pull that, but never being able to rest. And the last one, doubt, which is a little bit more difficult to see because of the very nature of that doubt, is confusion. You know, it's not being sure, it's uncertainty. And this is like being lost in the desert. You don't really know where you are. You don't know which direction to walk in to get water or to satiate your thirst. So I wanted to go a little bit into each before we meditate, just to give you a sense of how these things can manifest in practice. And the sense desire, first of all, can of course be from the gross, you know, thinking about food or sexual fantasies or whatever, you know, your mind conjures up to distract you and delude you into thinking that happiness lies somewhere else. All the way to the subtle kind of flickering of the mind that brings you out of your meditation. You know? And this can happen right up to deep stages of samadhi, you know, and even in samadhi states themselves, that there's just this subtle wanting that starts to bubble up again in the mind and take you out, back into the sensory world. So in general, it's a sense of wanting something more, not being satisfied or content with what you have. And one of the causes is that lack of appreciation and valuing of the moment, valuing of the present. We have to learn to be more fully present with what's already here, yeah? To be more fully where we already are and develop contentment in the moment. And another way to work with this is to see the danger in having those fantasies. And one of the dangers is that you're missing the happiness that's there right now. You're not giving it a chance to grow. You're leaking out your energy. The bliss is dissipating. And I've done this myself when I have been in lovely meditations and there's been quite a lot of happiness arising in the mind. I get kind of bubbly about it. I don't know if you've ever had that. You know, you leave the meditation session feeling quite energized, quite bubbly, and then you just want to write it all down, or you want to kind of start fantasizing about the next retreat that you're on and all the wonderful things you're going to do and what you're going to tell your teacher about your meditation. And before you know it, you've lost your energy because the mind has been, in a way, intoxicated by craving to keep that state going. Yeah, and there's this story that my teacher tells about a young monk who decided he was bored in his meditation, so instead he intentionally had a sexual fantasy for like 2 hours of his practice, which flew. And at the end of that, he got a bit scared and he realised, whoops, the teacher can read minds. Oh no, what's the teacher going to say now? And sure enough, he came out of his meditation and the teacher looked at him with this sort of piercing stare. And he just said, "You've just been wasting your time." So the ill will, the second hindrance, is easier to spot than the craving. The craving, remember, is what drives us. You know, it's the root cause of suffering. It's the root cause of what keeps samsara continuing, whether samsara is something that goes around and around in your mind, or you think of samsara in the bigger picture, like life after life. You know, it's this insatiable thirst, the insatiable wanting that's never quite content. And there's a certain pleasure to that. In a sense, we can say we're addicted to wanting, addicted to craving, because we think it feels good. It gives us a sense of being somebody, being something. Ill will, on the other hand, is actually quite unpleasant. And that, although seemingly more difficult, is actually easier to spot, because we don't want to feel it. It's unpleasant. Anger burns. It hurts. So ill will is not only outright anger, but it also manifests in meditation as the fault-finding mind. You know, the sense of boredom. It's peaceful, but it's a little bit dull. You know, I'm feeling bored. I don't know what to do with myself. Or it can manifest as irritability. Or impatience as well. And impatience is very subtle. But again, it's a sign of discontent with what's happening now. And also a lack of patience, right? A lack of trusting the process to work itself out. It can also manifest as guilt. Yeah? And guilt is something probably quite deeply ingrained in many of us brought up in Western-style societies, where we're taught that there's something intrinsically wrong with us or something we need to improve. And this can manifest simply as denying ourselves the opportunity to really relax, the opportunity to stop and not to have to achieve. Yeah? We can deny ourselves pleasure and joy in meditation. Sometimes it starts to arise and we just think, okay, well, maybe I don't quite deserve this. Maybe that's enough for me for now. I haven't really done enough to work hard for it, you know. I don't know if anybody else has had that, but I've certainly noticed that tendency in my mind. You're not being able to fully relax and open up to the pleasure. And one of the antidotes to this is creating a good relationship with your mind. A relationship of loving companionship in sickness and in health. Right? So if ill will is like a sickness, you don't want to desert yourself because of anger and ill will. That's actually the time to extend more friendship, more benevolence towards yourself. And then the last three, the tiredness and the lethargy. Tiredness, a few people brought up in the interview yesterday, is actually not as big an enemy as you may think. And one of the mistakes that many meditators make is fighting with that tiredness, trying to overcome it too soon, rather than just letting it be and letting the mind wake up in time. So when we fight tiredness, we're actually using more energy of the mind. And tiredness is a very low energy state. So in a sense, the best thing to do there is to plug up that leak in your bucket, in your water pot, with just resting, just being patient and allowing the mind to wake up. So don't force the mind at this time, because the mind will react and become even more sluggish and stubborn. But just see if you can rest with the tiredness, and over time your mind will brighten up. And then the restlessness and worry, a very big hindrance for many of us, is another kind of discontent. And again, one of the best remedies for that is just to wait for those winds to settle down. Ajahn Chah used to say, the leaves on the trees only move because of the wind. If we take away that wind, the leaf is naturally still. So instead of trying to pull the mind this way, pull the mind back, pull it back onto the breath with force. Just allow that leaf to come to a natural state of stillness by not interfering with the process. And of course, in all of these hindrances, for me, the best kind of lining, if you like, in the container, in the water jar, is a lining made with lots of contentment, lots of patience, lots of loving kindness, and making peace with these things. And then the last one, doubt, is difficult to see, and that's why it's doubt. We're not quite sure, you know, which way to go. It can be doubt in ourselves, it can be doubt in the teachings, doubt in the teachers, and that's maybe a more healthy doubt, because, you know, teachers are not perfect. Teachers are just, in a way, a conduit between the Buddha and the people who are right here now. We're practicing with you, we're trying to learn as we go, and just share a little bit of what's helped us. So one of the best ways to overcome doubt, again, is just to investigate. I guess this is a hindrance which can respond well to a little bit more investigation, examination, clarity about what you're doing and why. And also experience, you know, trying something out and seeing if it works. If it doesn't work, never mind, you've learned, you know, what not to do, and then you can try something else. So we have to be careful that the doubt doesn't go into a kind of cynical doubt that doesn't allow us to take a step. But we use this faculty of mind that's close to wisdom in an investigative way. Yeah, and then our doubt becomes a kind of investigative quality of the mind that can help to clear away some of the fog, clear away some of the confusion. So our first job, in brief then, is to weaken these hindrances. And we can do this by improving the qualities of our mind, improving our attitudes, putting in a lot of peace, a lot of patience, investigation, kindness. Yeah, and then it makes it much harder for these hindrances to grow. Another thing in the suttas that is repeatedly used by the monks and nuns in the Buddha's time is just the simple recognition that a hindrance is there. So this is the reason that I want to talk about them a little bit, not to make them seem like problems, but just so you can go, ah, I know you, anger. I know you, lost. I know you, tiredness. And in the Buddhist suttas, the monks and nuns used to say, I know you, Mara. Mara was like a personification of these afflictive qualities that drain the happiness. And you just don't entertain that particular guest. They can be there, the holes can be there, but you focus on filling up your water pot with all this wonderful soft lining so that they don't leak out your energy and joy. So, I think that's plenty from me, probably too much instruction. And now it's time to do some meditation for about 20 minutes or so. Just beginning by coming in contact with your body sitting. And asking your body what it needs at this time. Whether it's really comfortable or there's something you can do to bring about more ease. Regarding your body and mind as friends that you want to get to know. It's So just gently allowing the mind to receive any sensations you experience now. Including areas of tension or tightness, maybe achiness, but also noticing those parts of the body that are at ease, those sensations that are easy to rest with, that help you establish a feeling of being grounded, yet spacious and relaxed. Perhaps noticing subtle sensations that you may not normally tend to. Maybe sensations in the palms of your hands or the soles of the feet. Maybe your awareness takes in the whole of your body, including the skin, the area just beyond the skin. Can help to soften the mind to any pain or discomfort that may be present, widening the container. Bringing about a sense of space. Perhaps taking in the atmosphere of the room, the silence, the combined goodness, the good intentions of everybody here. Your own good intentions. Your own integrity, practicing not just for your sake, but practicing as a gift. And just noticing the condition of your mind right now without any judgment. Just the way you'd approach a friend. Finding out if they have any particular concern. Listening receptively. See what you can do to show kindness and care. What kind of relationship can you make with your mind to help it feel safe? Respected, welcome. How can you be a loving companion to your body and mind? Maybe it helps to gently tend to each part of your body. By allowing your awareness, suffused with kindness, to soak through each and every cell. Perhaps widening up around any areas of tightness or tension to give them space. Or at times maybe moving in to this discomfort tenderly, as though giving that part of your body a mental massage. Hand in hand with the breath, breathing into any areas of tightness, discomfort, or any difficult emotional states, breathing with a feeling of kindness. Allowing that relaxing, soothing rhythm of the breath to lend reassurance and care. As though the breath is a beautiful, soft pillow, a place you can rest your mind. Building more and more contentment in this present moment by valuing the present moment. Hindrances might arise, but you stay centered in the beautiful, contented, soft, loving qualities of your mind. Creating a lovely container, a watertight layer in the water pot of your mind. valuing every moment of peace, every moment of kindness and letting go. Drop by drop, the water jar is filled. Likewise, the wise ones gathering it, little by little, fill oneself with good.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.